The U.S. takes aim at Chinese banks aiding Russia's military. Plus, pro-Palestinian protests rock American campuses as schools scramble to limit disruption. And the UK Parliament okays a bill to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda as European countries ramp up their efforts to tackle illegal migration.
For almost 2 years, our opponents have used every trick in the book to block flights and keep the boats coming. But enough is enough.
It's Tuesday, April 23rd. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The U.S. is drafting sanctions that could cut off certain Chinese banks from the global financial system. That is according to people familiar with the matter, who said officials hope that the sanctions threat will stop Beijing's commercial support of Russia's military production. While China has thus far heeded Western warnings not to send arms to Russia, exports of dual-use commercial goods that also have military uses have surged since last year, a trend that U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who's due in Beijing today, warned about at a recent G7 meeting.
When it comes to Russia's defense industrial base, the primary contributor in this moment to that is China. We see China sharing machine tools, semiconductors, other dual-use items that have helped Russia rebuild the defense industrial base that sanctions and export controls had done so much to degrade.
China's foreign ministry has called sanctions against its firms economic coercion, unilateralism, and bullying, and has pledged to safeguard the lawful rights and interests of Chinese companies. Dozens of protesters were arrested yesterday at both New York University and Yale, which are among several universities struggling to defuse campus tensions over the Israel-Hamas war. In New York, police arrested more than 100 pro-Palestinian protesters, while 50 protesters at Yale University were arrested following a week-long demonstration on and around the New Haven, Connecticut campus. Speaking near Columbia University's campus in Upper Manhattan, Republican Congressman Mike Lawler and Democratic Congressman Daniel Sachs Goldman responded to questions over whether university presidents who do not take action against protesters should be forced to resign.
What we are seeing on these campuses is an absolute abomination. These children that are engaged in this anti-Semitic hate should be expelled immediately.
We do not believe that the problem is with every single president. We believe it is a systemic problem that needs to have leadership and needs to have people working together, both elected representatives and members of the administrations of academic institutions, to combat what is this dramatic rise of anti-Semitism and a feeling of insecurity from Jews on campus.
Classes at Columbia were moved online Monday as the school moved to de-escalate the situation. Protesters have been calling for Columbia to divest from financial interests in corporations with ties to Israel, while donors and lawmakers have warned that funding for the school would be at risk if it didn't do more to protect Jewish students on campus. The British Parliament has passed a controversial policy to send asylum seekers to Rwanda, with Prime Minister Rishi Sunak promising that deportation flights could begin within weeks. It comes as other countries, including Germany and Italy, seek deals with foreign capitals to accept asylum seekers as their resettlement applications are considered. The British plan, first announced in 2022, faced repeated legal challenges. But speaking yesterday, Sunak said he wouldn't allow the immigration deterrence policy to be thwarted again.
But we are ready. Plans are in place. And these flights will go come what may. No foreign court will stop us from getting flights off.
The UN's refugee agency has criticized the Rwanda policy for shifting the UK's responsibility to guarantee the protection of refugees to another country. The Federal Trade Commission is suing the owners of Coach and Michael Kors in order to block an $8.5 billion merger of the two premium handbag makers on the grounds that it would give the combined firm too much market power. Here was Journal reporter Ben Dummett.
the latest action stands out because it speaks to the agency's broader effort to take a more aggressive stance on antitrust enforcement. It comes on the heels of the FTC's recent action to sue to block Kroger's $25 billion acquisition of Albertson, which would be the U.S.'s biggest supermarket deal if it went ahead. And it has also sued Amazon, alleging the online retailer uses anti-competitive practices to maintain its power.
Parent companies Tapestry and Capri said they intend to defend the case in court to complete the deal. Starbucks is heading to the Supreme Court today in a bid to limit a government labor board that's been eager to support union drives. The National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB, which referees disputes between employers and workers, has brought a dozen cases seeking court injunctions against Starbucks alone, challenging the coffee giant's responses to unionization efforts. WSJ legal affairs reporter Aaron Mulvaney explains the significance of the case.
On one hand, some labor law experts say the case could have a limited impact, as the court will technically consider which legal standards should be used in lower courts when a company decides it wants to challenge the board. But the broader significance, some say, is that it shows the willingness of the court to listen to Starbucks, and possibly that they think that the board should somehow be reined in. In many ways, things are colliding right now in the labor space with the pro-labor NLRB and surging interest in union activity, and all of which has led to some deep-pocketed employers fighting back in court.
Starbucks recently agreed to new discussions on a labor agreement and will resume collective bargaining talks with the union this week. And in other Supreme Court news, justices from its conservative majority yesterday seemed ready to let cities crack down on homeless camps, suggesting that a lower court ruling limiting their ability to do so intruded on their discretion to govern their communities. The case, which is set to be decided before July, has made allies of rural towns and big cities seeking more leeway in addressing a societal problem that continues to grow. According to the federal government, more than 650,000 people are homeless across the U.S. on a given night, the highest number since data collection began in 2007. Coming up, the number of books banned in the U.S. has skyrocketed as titles around race and gender get embroiled in today's culture wars. We've got that story after the break.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Amid today's culture wars, a number of topics have become flashpoints in the U.S., ranging from abortion rights to public statues and, increasingly, books. According to a report released by the American Library Association, the number of books targeted with book bans jumped 65% last year to more than 4,200, a massive increase from the relatively stable number of around 400 books challenged annually over the first two decades of the millennia. WSJ reporter Joseph De Avila spoke to our producer Kate Bullivant about some of the titles under fire and the groups calling for their ban.
So the most challenged books of 2023 were Genderqueer, a memoir by non-binary author Maya Kobabe, All Boys Aren't Blue, another memoir, and this was by George M. Johnson, and This Book is Gay by Juno Dawson. And what many of these books have in common is that they're dealing with issues of sexuality and gender and also race.
So who is it that's behind these book bans, and what's their reasoning for banning these specific titles?
Many of these book bans are coming from conservative groups, conservative activists, and parents, and have challenged these books in particular because they say some of the material included in them is inappropriate for children, and some of them include mentions about sexuality and discussions of sex, and also have some other explicit content.
The level of books challenged annually in the last 20 years, that has actually been fairly stable. So why are we seeing such a steep increase now?
Well, it's part of a developing culture war in the U.S. In Florida, in particular, they passed a law called the Parental Rights in Education Act, which opponents called the Don't Say Gay Law. And this restricted material that can be taught in classrooms in Florida. And after that, conservative groups and parents started challenging books in schools and school libraries that they thought were inappropriate. In Florida last year, more than 2,500 titles were challenged, and that was the state with the most challenges last year. Second was Texas, and that figure was just under 1,500 titles that were challenged.
Joseph, it'd be fascinating to know where public opinion on all of this sits when it comes to issues such as race and gender, as well as banning books.
It shows that this topic is still pretty divisive in the U.S. There's been a few public opinion polls issued by CBS and YouGov and others that have shown, in general, the public is supportive of having access to these books in libraries and schools.
Okay, so the public want their books, but what have the authors and publishers said to all of this?
Well, Penguin Random House has been fighting many of these bans. They filed a few different lawsuits challenging the bans on First Amendment grounds, and they hope to get many of these banned books back into schools and libraries. Johnson, one of the authors that's on the most banned book list, has also joined in on a federal lawsuit seeking to get their book back into schools and libraries as well. Johnson said that these book bans attempts were an attempt to dumb down the nation, in their words. And this was by denying people the opportunity to read the lived experiences of marginalized communities.
That was Journal reporter Joseph D'Avila. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And before we go, a final note about a correction that we made to this episode. In an earlier version of the show, we incorrectly referenced the merger between Coach and Michael Kors as an $8.5 million deal, when in fact the merger is worth $8.5 billion. And that is What's News for Tuesday morning. Additional sound in this episode was from Reuters. Today's show was produced by Daniel Bach and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producers were Christina Rocha and Sandra Kilhoff. And I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. And until then, thanks for listening.